This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. 60 years ago today, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee was founded on the campus of Shaw University. SNCC members, young as they were, served on the front lines of the civil rights movement. Student members endured beatings and imprisonment on freedom rides in 1961, led voter education and registration across the South, marched on Washington in 1963, and put together the 1964 Freedom Summer. But months before young people coalesced into a national movement, college students in North Carolina mobilized independently, kicked off by lunch counter sit-ins here in North Carolina. To tell us more about that, I'd like to welcome Valerie Johnson back to the program. She's Dean of Arts, Humanities, and Sciences at Shaw University. Hello, Valerie Johnson. Welcome back.
Thank you. Well, glad to be here.
I'm also honored that the Reverend David C. Forbes is joining us. In addition to being a former dean of Shaw's School of Divinity, Reverend Forbes was co-founder of SNCC. David Forbes, welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
Let me start with you and ask you, you were a sophomore at Shaw when A&T students led the Greensboro sit-ins, and then 2 weeks later, you organized a sit-in at the Woolworths in Raleigh. Take us back to 1960 and describe the strategies of that protest and how it played out.
Well, when the sit-ins broke at Woolworth and Greensboro, students not only in North Carolina, Shaw, St. Aug, Winston-Salem, Johnson C. Smith, read about this and met and decided that what the students, the four students at the Woolworth and Greensboro had begun necessitated some study from us, in that the same conditions that necessitated the action in Greensboro had implications for Raleigh and Durham and other cities as well. So we met, went into a period of study and strategizing, and decided that we would 2 weeks later sit in at the Woolworth and Cameron Village in Raleigh.
Were you talk about these meetings, were there some form of meetings going on, or did these meetings just come together quickly? Because you talk about study and strategy and all of that, and I wonder how much of that had been in the works and how much of it just sort of developed right in that moment.
It developed spontaneously in response to what happened in Greensboro. A great number of students were arrested in Greensboro, and we reasoned at Shaw and St. Aug that we had an opportunity to also become a part of social change by challenging the segregation status quo.
Valerie Johnson, talk about the significance of historically black colleges mobilizing within the civil rights movement. I mean, we sort of think about it as one monolithic movement, but there were many communities, church, university, and neighborhood communities. So let me ask you about the role of historically black colleges and universities at this moment.
Well, what I think is important to remember, and I'm glad you brought up the idea that if there were these varied responses across the landscape, students were responding in ways that were particular to their communities and their connections and their relationships to the greater community. So they were operating out of what they were experiencing, but also their relationships that they had networked. So, for example, Reverend Dr. Forbes talks about the connection between St. Aug and Shaw University, that these students are engaged with one another, so they're talking with each other and they're learning from each other and from faculty and staff mentors who were helping. And part of that was the component of historically black colleges and universities grounding students in the moral and just ideas of our history. Remember, these schools are founded after a period of enslavement, and so that is a part of the continuing discussion and story that happens in the narratives that are training the young people to be critical of what is going on in their society and also to be contributors to the solutions. And so you can feel that so much when you talk to many of the young people who are now our elders who've organized SNCC at the time.
So, David Forbes, take us from the academic, these ideas, these theories, and this spirit that had been generated and maintained by the historically black colleges and universities. And what happens when it actually has to meet the ground, as you did, as students put it together and go into Cameron Village to protest at the Woolworth? What was going through your mind, and what was that like on that day when you walked to Cameron Village?
We decided that it would be strategic to our advantage not to walk from Shaw's campus, which is downtown, down Federal Street, because we would be passing the police station at Davies Street in Federal Street, and they would certainly intervene to stop our entry into Woolworth. We decided instead that we would get automobiles and transport students to Cameron Village and to mass where the Harris Teeter is now. That was at the time Sears and Roebuck in that parking lot, and that we would walk and converge from different directions to the Woolworth so that the management would not be aware of our intent until we had already taken places at the segregated lunch counters. Our intent was to challenge the local law and moray that said that blacks could not sit at lunch counters where whites were.
Did you think about the consequences and talk about the consequences before you went? And I just wondered what it was like on that day when obviously you'd made the decision, but now you got to go.
We very much talked about it. We met maybe 50 or 60 students at Shaw, and we screened students out if they felt like they would have inclination towards violence. We asked them to take a different kind of role. They could make picket signs. They could fundraise, but we were very careful to be sure that only those students who were committed to nonviolence and were prepared to absorb whatever kind of violence came our way, because we recognized that if we went and made trouble, the armories would be unleashed, and certainly the police forces would be able to thwart our effort, which was to demonstrate the evil and inequality of segregation at the lunch counters.
Valerie Johnson, you know, the Young People's Movement was kept independent, and this is interesting. SNCC was formed, but that is thanks to the advocacy, thanks in large part to the advocacy of a North Carolinian. Tell us about Ella Baker.
Oh, Ella Baker was an amazing person in and of her own right. A lot of folk connect her just with SNCC, but she had a long history of advocacy going all the way back to even her years at Shaw University as a student. When she was at Shaw, she had the temerity to protest our policies that she felt were unjust. So this was something that came out of her growing up with parents who told her about her history and who expected that she would act on her passion to be just. And so that follows through all of her organizational opportunities, all the things that she was involved in, like the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, NAACP. She was not afraid to stand up for what she believed was correct. And she also did something that I know is really important. She respected the young people that she was involved with. She respected their opinions. She understood that they needed to get some organizational training, and so she brought that to her facilitating this movement in the birth of SNCC, but she stepped back and said, the best leaders, I'm paraphrasing, the best leaders are those who develop leadership in others. And that was her mantra from very young all the way through all of her protest and activism and social justice work.
Well, let's listen to Ella Baker now talk a little bit about her theory and her ideology and ideas about organizing.
It takes organization. It takes dedication. It takes the willingness to stand by and do what has to be done when it has to be done. A nice gathering like today is not enough. You have to go back and reach out to your neighbors who don't speak to you. And you have to reach out to your friends who think they are making it good and get them to understand that they, as well as you and I, cannot be free in America or anywhere else where there is capitalism and imperialism until we can get people to recognize that they themselves have to make the struggle and have to make the fight for freedom every day in the year, every year, until they win it. Thank you.
Now, civil rights leader Ella Baker of Littleton, North Carolina. Now, there, interestingly enough, speaking at a 1974 rally in support of Puerto Rican independence, we're celebrating the 60th anniversary of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, in which she played a part and founded on this day at Shaw University. I'm talking with the Dean of the School of Arts and Sciences at Shaw, Valerie Johnson, and the Reverend Dr. David C. Forbes, who is a founding member of SNCC. I mean, I think it's fascinating, Valerie Johnson, because you talked about the idea that she was involved before the founding of SNCC, and here she is in 1974, still very active and still promoting many of the same ideas.
Yes, I think it's important to remember that folk are networked and are doing this throughout their whole life. If you were to get a fuller picture from Dr. Forbes, who's on the call with us, you would find that it, from his time as a sophomore at Shaw University through his whole career, there has been this thread of advocating for justice and advocating for the social well-being. And I think that is critical and key to remember about all of the different leaders. And I was, in listening to her, I got inspired all over again and excited and enthused.
Reverend Forbes, let me ask you about her inspiration and her impact on you, as you personally and the students who worked with you.
Ella Baker was a most remarkable lady, very fiery, very serious, well-traveled and well-read. And what is not known by many people is that when she, as the field secretary for SCLC, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, was asked to convene the students, the intent of Martin King and SCLC was for the adults to direct the movement. And she single-handedly fought that idea, saying that adults had had many years to address the social and political and economic woes of the nation, and that students needed to be free of the hand of SCLC to discover for themselves and to allow their own leadership to shine. So she single-handedly fought for the students to have independence. And that's a very heady idea when you recognize that I was 19, and many of the students across the South who participated in sit-ins and went to jail and got beaten up by Bull Connor's forces in Alabama were able to experience from ground up the cost of leadership. And I today, along with those who yet remain from that era, are very proud that we had that opportunity, because eventually the efforts to desegregate the lunch counters moved into interstate travel and bus rides, bus-ins, and many other ways of trying to challenge the status quo. All of that was inspired by the freedom that we had through Ella Baker. And because of what we did in 1964, the Civil Rights Act was passed that made it difficult for white citizens' councils and other whites to lynch and take advantage and intimidate Negroes. And then, and in 1965, the Voting Rights Act came after the Civil Rights Act in 64. All of that eventually led to the election of Barack Obama. And it is very heady to think that the efforts of young students could somehow stimulate a movement that would bring about that kind of change in America.
It had a powerful impact, to be sure. Let's talk about that moment, though. You talk about the Civil Rights Bill, because I know that there was tension within SNCC regarding the bill and the Kennedy administration's place in the movement. Tell us about that.
Well, that was from the beginning. Different sides within the movement. Those who heard the voice of Dr. King and nonviolence, and those who at the same time who were listening to Malcolm X, who had a position not given to nonviolence, but to retribution when it became appropriate. So the efforts to move towards national intervention was not necessarily celebrated by those who were following the voice of Malcolm X. And there was always that kind of tension. But fortunately, Dr. King was diplomatic enough. At that time, it was not so much students, but SCLC who was at the table with the NAACP and SNCC and CORE, the Congress of Racial Equality, that brokered the effort at the Civil Rights Bill.
And again, I'm trying to think back to the moment that you were living as you're making these decisions. You talked about certainly the inspiration of Ella Baker to make the point that students can and should be in the vanguard of this movement and an independent movement. Won the case at SCLC, which was not easy for a woman to do back in those years, and she was successful. And it certainly makes sense to us now. In that moment, were you thinking to yourself, you know, what do my parents think? What about if Dr. King isn't really on board with this? Well, do I really have that kind of voice? Should I be in that position? Did you have any doubts as a young person at that time?
I did not have any doubts because I was born into a family that taught the importance of social justice. They were essentially incrementalists, but had no difficulty with me taking the stand that I did. I had the cooperation of my parents. And in fact, when we met as students, we made sure that students, number one, made their parents knowledgeable. Number two, if their parents were economically at risk, that they should not directly participate in the movement, certainly not be seen in photographs of the News and Observer, because that would get their parents fired. Dr. King taught us that the genius of SNCC and the student movement is that we were not participants in the American body politic. We did not have jobs. We could not be fired. Therefore, we were free to reach out and protest and make a difference. That was a genius of Dr. King that turned out to be very true.
Valerie Johnson, I've left you very little time, and Reverend Dr. Forbes has been eloquent about what he thinks is the legacy of SNCC. What do you think it is, and what's different about the activism today in about 30 seconds that I've given you?
Well, I have to follow the lead of my president, Dr. Paulette Dillard, when she says that we're living out the spirit of SNCC. And so it is moving forward in the ways in which students and young people are organizing. It's not coming from a place of blankness. They are building on the strategies that were created. I'm thinking about when I was a participant in the divestment movement at UC Berkeley and anti-apartheid. We were drawing on the strategies and the ideas and the notion that you had to think through in a critical way what you were going to do and how you were going to do it. That all comes from out of the Civil Rights Movement, and so I see that continuing in the efforts of Black Lives Matter, in the social media campaigns that young people are deploying. The most successful ones are the ones that understand about network relationships.
Valerie Johnson,
I'm
going to close it out. Valerie Johnson Achar, Reverend Dr. David Forbes Sr., who is co-founder of SNCC, thank you for being on the program.
Thank you so so much for this time.